You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome back to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. It's time to light up a cigar.
What's our
pick this week, Brad?
This week we are smoking the Esteban Carreras, the Chupacabra.
Yes, the Chupacabra, legendary Mexican vampire.
Yeah, you got to watch out for those old, cryptid, cryptoids.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, for some reason I've always been a fan of the Chupacabra. Yeah, I think I just like saying it, but we have like a framed drawing. We bought it at an Akron of a Chupacabra in the Nerd Cave. So seeing this, we're like, we have to smoke that cigar.
And I mean, you know, the legend of the Chupacabra is it's known for its habit of attacking and drinking the blood of livestock, especially goats.
Yeah, Chupacabra is actually Spanish for goat sucker.
Yeah. So, you know, in keeping with, you know, the monster theme, the cigar is actually rolled in the old style with a dark oily wrapper and a rough closed foot and a pigtail cap. So, in a sense, your cigar is, you know, this animal that you're about to suck the blood from.
Yeah, they on their website it said it's a mystery to explain how something born of such raw power can be so nuanced. And it's wrapped in an oily, unfermented Habano Oscura leaf. Full-bodied through and through.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, once again, probably not one of those cigars for the, you know, the weak or the faint of heart. But, you know, for me, this is turned out to be a pretty good smoke.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have any problem with mine. Yours was a little bit kind of plugged at the start. So, but yeah, once it opened up, it started smoking real good. And, I mean, that's... Even your best cigars, you can run across been
occasionally
plugged.
You're just going to, you know, find a cigar that's plugged. And, you know, a lot of times if you're well known around cigar shops and you happen to, you know, get a hold of a, you know, cigar that's plugged and you don't have a draw poker, then a lot of times, you know, the shops will go ahead and let you exchange, you know, that cigar for another of the same type or something. Now, if you, you know, freaking light up an Opus X and you make it a habit every time you get halfway through an Opus X and complain about the draw, you're probably just going to get your ass booted out of the store as you
yeah,
should.
If you're halfway through, it's a little too late to complain.
Yeah. I mean, out of all of the, you know, cigars that I've smoked and everything, this is only the second cigar I've run across that, you know, I've had a little bit of a draw issue with. And, you know, all it takes is, you know, shit, I've got, you know, just an old, you know, I mean, it's about the size of an old school, you know, wire coat hanger, and it's just got a, you know, pointed tip. So, you know, you just put that through the center of the cigar, and, you know, once you hit that spot that's plugged, most of the time it'll draw, you know, perfect.
So, yeah, that's maybe something if you smoke a lot of cigars to invest in, just to have them around the house. And like I said, mine's been smoking perfect, and the other from the same batch. So, like I said, it's just kind of a random thing you run across occasionally.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of times it's just, you know, the fact, especially with hand-rolled cigars, is occasionally, you know, somebody may roll one that's, you know, just a little bit tight. So, you know, it does not take away, you know, my thoughts of the cigar and everything else. Like I said, now that it's opened up and everything, I mean, I definitely feel like I've got a monstrous beast that I'm trying to tame, yeah. Which...
Yeah, I've not really smoked any of the Esteban Carreras before, but yeah, I'm digging this smoke. Yeah, this is one of those I kind of bought because of the name, but it's not been a disappointment. And with that, this is going to be our birthday episode since mine and Brad's birthdays both in March.
Yay, party! Show us your boobies.
Yours has just passed, and mine's coming up in about another 4 days, so. Yeah, we're getting old, folks. So we'll be right back with the birthday episode where we talk about movies that are the same age as we are. Be right back.
Stay tuned.
Hey,
played a guitar on MTV. That ain't working. That's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks for free.
And welcome back to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. This is going to be our birthday episode. So we're going to talk about movies that, you know, were released the same time we were and then kind of became legendary like we wish we did.
Yeah, so, you know, part of the birthday episode, we invited the one person that we knew would actually attend a birthday party. So,
you've heard us give him shit before. The Juice is here.
Yo.
The man, the myth, the legend.
And he's actually smoking a cigar. We told him he couldn't bring his pipe if he wanted to hang out in the nerd cave.
Yeah, y'all suck.
Yeah, so I guess we'll jump into it. So
well,
I was
let me ask this, because you know your birthday's already passed and mine's coming up in a couple days, but you know you hit the big 3-0 this year. And does it feel any different?
I don't know, man. I'm just worried about another decade where the erectile dysfunction starts kicking in and stuff from all these commercials I keep hearing on the radio. So I think I'm just going to stay 30 for the rest of my life.
You need to start taking your men's one a day.
It's not the erectile dysfunction. It's the having nothing to do with the erection that I run into. It's being a single man is it's rough on a player.
It's worse when you're married. Trust me.
So how do you want to do this, Joe? Your birthday, came before mine. Do you want to jump into, movies that released in your birth year and kind of go in chronological order?
So, Brad, are you saying Joe comes before you?
I mean, Joe, he's a little bit older.
You might want to – they make medicine for that.
Hey, it's a race, I win.
Oh, it's always about race, huh? Got to pull the race card?
Go away. Go ahead and cut his mic off. Yeah, like I said, well, I didn't do it in any kind of chronological order, but we can jump back and forth. One of the things that, and we'll kind of talk about some other stuff that happened in those years. If y'all didn't know, I'm an old bastard, and I came out in 1979.
Young kids.
But, shut up, old man. One of the things that came out in my birth year was the original Star Trek movie, Star Trek The Motion Picture in 1979.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly have not seen this movie just based on everybody's feedback that probably a good thing I haven't watched this because it would be a waste of my life.
Oh, yeah.
I have to disagree. Actually, it's one of my favorites. It's long as fuck, but,
Yeah, it's horrible.
No, it's storyline. It's there, man. It really is. V'ger. What is V'ger? It's awesome.
It was boring as fuck.
Not as bad as Space Odyssey 2001.
Well, yeah, but now it... It came out 10 years after the end of the original series. Originally, they were kind of wanting to do a second series. They were going to call it Star Trek Phase 2, and that kind of fell through. And Gene Roddenberry was like, "We need to continue the series as a movie series." And the show was so popular in syndication that they finally "All right, cool. We'll do instead of the Phase 2 thing, we'll do a movie." And they came out with the Star Trek The Motion Picture, which, it was all right. It was kind of cool because, like I said, it was 10 years later, so they kind of, half the crew had, Bones and Spock had pretty much retired. Captain Kirk was an admiral now and been working a desk job, and he was kind of bored shitless with that. So when some big alien threat is coming toward the Earth, and the only ship close enough to respond is the Enterprise, who's getting, a complete retrofit, he's like, I'm the most experienced person. I'll take the Enterprise and go check this shit out and kind of use it as an excuse to hijack the Enterprise and become a captain again.
Yeah. I don't know, man. For some reason, I just never could get on board with Star Trek for some reason. And I think maybe it's because I missed so much of the TV series and stuff that led up to the movies and
this first movie, it did get a lot of, critical people not liking it because it was so different than the show. I mean, there's no action whatsoever in that movie. I mean, there's no they never use the phasers. There's no space combat. The uniforms look so much weird if you're weirder than the original series. And it just, like I said, it looks amazing, but it's just slow.
Looks amazing compared to watching Star Wars or something. In terms of the year 1979, or looks amazing.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're still getting the vector graphics, early CGI, but I mean, it was shot pretty, but it just did not look like Star Trek. And like I said, a lot of people didn't like it because of that, because it was so it was, you know, so no action whatsoever in that movie.
But again, for its time, just like Star Wars, the graphics were amazing.
I mean, Star Wars still looks better than...
Agreed.
But, I mean, after that, though, they kind of changed the way things were run. And, you know, the second movie, Wrath of Khan, considered one of the best of the series. So it's kind of like when you tell people to watch Star Wars, start with A New Hope and watch the prequels later. If you're going to run through the Star Trek series, start with Wrath of Khan. And then eventually,
oh, yeah. I mean, when it comes to
if
Star
you're bored
Wars,
enough, go back and watch.
If I had started with episode 1, I would have never finished the movies.
Episode 1 wouldn't have been bad if it weren't for Jar Jar. I mean, hell,
episode 1 was a kid's movie. What the hell are you talking about?
Other than Darth Maul.
So yeah, I think we're done with Star Trek. Damn, that was short lived.
But I did like Bones. It's like, you know, he was retired, but Jim's like, I got to get the band back together, so he forces him to, like, you know, come back, you know, makes him come back to service. And, like, you see him, like, first see him, he's, like, got a beard and wearing this, like, seriously, like, 70s disco medallion. He's, like, you know, full-on retired pimping somewhere in Space Florida or whatever.
So, I mean, you know, through the lack of action, there are some, I guess, some key high points there that, you know, folks could appreciate.
Big bald-headed chicks.
Yeah, the whatever science officer or whatever.
The alien at the end was a big bald-headed chick.
Well, she was a person on the ship first, and the alien took her over and made a probe out of her.
You're right.
But she was a person to begin
with. I apologize. It's been a long time since I've seen it.
Yeah, we know you're old. You forget shit.
Hey, I got dementia.
I'm not even old, and I still... Shit, I don't even give it a chance to forget. That's why we do science. That way I can get educated.
Education is good.
Yeah, but like I said, I went back and rewatched all this stuff recently, and it's like it's got a good story, but it's just I said if you're wanting to see a Star Trek movie where there's, you know, action and space battles and such, no, it's
yeah. If I want to see space battles and such, then we'll jump to the year I was born, where shit was a little bit more epic.
All right, well, then let's jump forward in time back to the 1985.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess while we're on our, you know, outer space, you know, alien race debacle, one of my favorite movies from 85, Enemy Mine.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Wolfgang Petersen. And it's absolute, you know.
And good old, Iron Eagle Lou Gossett Jr.
Yep. So, I mean, you know, you had Dennis Quaid, you know, basically, you know, as both human and alien soldier, or, you know, Dennis Quaid was a human soldier. And just the storyline and everything else to this movie, you know, kind of, I mean, it captivated my attention when I was younger. And then just going back and watching it a few days ago, you know, I was like, damn, this movie is just as good as I can remember it.
I mean, yeah, the people who don't know, it's the Earth, or the Bilateral Terran Alliance. You know, the Earthlings are at this war with these reptilians called the Drax. And Lou Gossett Jr. is an alien pilot, and Dennis Quaid is a human pilot. And they both end up getting shot down on this, like, abandoned planet and are stranded there for, like, years and years.
Yeah,
and
you know, not only are, you know... being human and alien, are they at plague? But, you know, the kind of the thing that brings them together is this planet is out to get them left and right. I mean, yeah. Shit, you got meteor storms happening, badass freaking blizzards, and all kinds of nasty creatures just lurking beneath the...
Yeah, they're pretty much forced to rely on each other and eventually become friends and pretty much family through the thing. And, it, you know, for the time, too, it was kind of a, you know, a sci-fi... take on race relations too. I mean, these two guys that, you know, could have been like, you know, a Klansman and, you know,
yeah, I mean, they were basically enemies by birth, just because neither one knew anything about the other. You know, I mean, it was, they were indoctrinated, you know, essentially to hate from the very beginning. And, you know, with the, you know, forces of nature and everything else come together, and, you know, like you said, they eventually become family.
Yeah, and then
it goes all the way down to a soldier is trained to hate their enemy, no matter, not knowing anything about them. And that's kind of what the movie's all about. And then when you learn
They learn each other's languages and customs and culture. And
correct. Most soldiers don't really know what they're fighting about. Know who they're fighting. I'm sorry, that came out wrong.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and the other thing is, you know, there's no, you know, sex among, you know, the species. So,
they basically
produce
like
asexually.
They just kind of lay eggs or whatnot.
Well, I mean, it just, you know, time comes and all of a sudden, you know, oh, we're about to give birth. So, you know, Dennis Quaid is, you know, now kind of taking on more of a parental role to,
I remember, you know, the basis of
zombies.
The movie. And it was like, it's been so long since I've seen it, I forgot that, you know, Lou Gossett's character just has kids. So I was like, when I was remembering it, I'm like, I know there was a baby involved. Did they like eventually hook up or something on this?
There's no Brokeback Mountain in space.
But yeah, once I went back, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot he just lays, yeah, has a baby on his own. But yeah, it was like, I was like remembering, I'm like, did eventually that turn into something? I mean, you're stranded on an island for a long time.
Nah, I mean, they kept it, you know, strictly at a friendship level. There was no interspecies erotica or anything with this
total
film.
Bromance, no romance.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think one of the pivotal moments is, you know, once, you know, the outlaw mining group comes to take over and they actually end up kidnapping the young Drac, then, you know, once Dennis Quaid gets rehabilitated and reunited, then all the other Dracs are like, holy crap, this is a good human. And,
yeah,
you know, then the tides really turn for the better.
Hunts them down and frees the kid and then actually, you know, takes the kid back to his people. And, you know, he has to perform like the, I don't know, I guess like the fatherhood ceremony that to introduce him into the culture by reciting his entire bloodline or whatnot. And he, you know, actually did that for the kid so he could be part of their culture. And like, so, yeah, they pretty much, yeah, kind of, you know, all get along in the end, or at least a few of them start getting along.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, overall, a phenomenal movie if you guys haven't checked it out. I mean, it's, and even the, you know, CGI and the special effects, I mean, they actually, you know, still held their own compared to, you know, some of the movies today. So,
for
you know,
time, yes, it was
this
incredible.
This movie was very much, you know, before its time.
Yeah, I mean, most of the movies on like some alien planet too, so there's not a whole lot of, you know, super super complicated special effects. But I mean, it still, like I said, it holds up.
All right. So, do we want to rewind back to
as long as we're still talking about? Let's talk about a better space movie. Ridley Scott's Aliens or Alien, the original.
Oh, the old 1979
Game over, man.
Horrific.
No, that
yeah.
was Aliens.
Was that Aliens? My bad.
Yeah, this one was directed by Ridley Scott, you know, and you had Veronica Cartwright and Harry Dean Stanton, John Hurt.
Top Gun's Tom Skerritt.
Yeah, I forgot about Tom, so.
It's been several years. Was Scorny in that one, too?
Yeah, the Scorny Weaver is the original Ripley. That was her first movie in the Alien series.
And then how about John Hurt going back to Spaceballs going, no, not again.
Yeah, that was, you know, when Spaceballs parodied it later, it was the entire Nostromo's crew, except for Sigourney Weaver was not in it. But yeah, it was like that original crew, and then John Hurt's character gets the alien ripping out of his chest again.
I mean, this was, you know, freaking, you know, I mean, this film was nominated for Best Visual Effects and, you know, Best Science Fiction Film.
Yeah, and it was put in the Library of Congress in 2002 for, you know, historical preservation. Like we talked about The Quiet Man last week. It's one of the ones that's deemed culturally significant and has been preserved for future generations.
Isn't there talks on them bringing Sigourney Weaver back and doing another one?
Yeah, I think there is. They're talking about a new Alien series, but I've not heard a whole lot about it other than it's they're talking about having, and then like the H.R. Giger design work too, and that too was, you know, he designed
yeah,
a lot
dude,
of the,
I'm a big fan
he designed
of
the alien
Giger
itself
artwork.
And the a lot of the visuals, I mean, the when they get into that alien craft at first, I mean, that's like the first thing I can remember seeing that like looked truly alien, not something that's like, you know, just a modernized
yeah, I mean
human
you truly get that area. You know, outer world experience with that. I mean, you know, and, you know, I guess, you know, to speak to the film's success, I mean, you know, this went on to, you know, spawn a franchise of novels, comic books, video games. I mean, I can remember playing, you know, freaking Alien on Sega Genesis.
Oh, yeah. I mean...
Well, how about that? Before the movie even came out, they had the Predator versus Alien video game back in the early 90s, didn't they?
I don't remember the game. I remember the comic book series for a while. But I think there was that Alien versus Predator where you could play as a...
A Marine or...
You could play a human or a Predator fighting the aliens. And that was a badass arcade game. I think you could play Alien,
too, if I remember. It's been, like, again, several years since I played that one. It was hard as anything, if I remember.
Yeah, that was a good game. There's been a few first-person shooters in the same Alien world, but...
That would be a good one to find an emulator for and start again.
Yeah, I mean, it's been said as one of the seven best sci-fi movies of all time, and one of the 33rd greatest film of all time, according to some surveys. And I just rewatching that again too. It's like it for some reason in my mind there was a lot more violence in it, but watching it now, there's not so much violence. It's just absolute creepy.
Just and the fuck out of you, creepy.
Yeah, and it's one of the things that I noticed that I think adds to the creepiness of it is how slow everything moves, except for when the alien attacks. Like through the rest, I mean, the ship moves really slow. I mean, when they're landing,
dude, that's just because they're traveling so fast that
it's like everything in the movie seems to like pace itself real slow until the alien attacks. So whenever there's that scare point, something's moving really fast.
Yeah.
So you're so used to that just kind of like quietness of it, then all of a sudden, boom, there it is. And even when you see him attack half the time, he gets up slowly, he slowly starts, you know, opening his mouth, just building that, then all of a sudden, you know, little thing comes out and bites your head off.
Yeah, and I mean, for people that, you know, to give you a physical appearance, I mean, we're not talking, you know, Marvin the Martian or anything. I mean, these aliens, you know, grow into, you know, freaking 7-foot-tall monsters with very formidable strength. Like you said, you know, with the speed, agility, and everything else, as well as the fact that they're very intuitive. I mean, they're very. They're a force to be reckoned with for sure.
Even in that, you know, they're so that kind of biomechanical look to them too. They camouflage real well with the inside of the spaceship. There's, I mean, so many times where it's like, especially in that the final scene where Sigourney Weaver's on the shuttle and the alien has got on the shuttle with her. Like she walks by it a couple times, and like you don't even realize it's part of the mechanical shit that you're seeing, and then all of a sudden its head moves and you're like, oh shit, it's on the ship. And,
yeah,
I mean, and that probably is like the height of stressful situation is when she's, because at that point she's like in her underwear, you know, I mean, that's probably your most vulnerable time. If you're gonna get attacked when you're like in your drawers in your house and then, oh shit, there's an alien here, I mean, that's like an extra level of stress. And I mean that, but yeah, it was just the way things were, like, you know, would just the sudden attacks. I mean, everything's slow, 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 boom, you know.
Right there in your face. I mean, there's no avoiding it at that point. So,
especially when my favorite was when Tom Skerritt's like in the ventilation shaft with the flamethrower and they're like, it's coming for you, man, it's coming for you. And he's like, where the hell is it? And finally, like, you know, the light just kind of like barely goes past it and it's like, that's all you get. You don't even see him like taking him out. You see him like kind of just like, you know, just suddenly pop its arms out.
I can remember, you know, going to, you know, Disney World and Magic Kingdom. I mean, this is back, golly, more than a decade, if not longer ago. And they had, you know, basically like a 4D, you know, room that you went in. And there was a big capsule with the alien that escapes and everything. And this movie is what I kept envisioning. Like, I, you know, I was probably
They got little air jets and stuff, so it feels like it's running past you in the dark and stuff.
And then it hits you, you know, you smell of garlic in the air or the wings flap by or, you know. And being a kid, dude, that was pretty creepy.
Yeah, there's even like little, I think, like water jets and like that. So you think the thing's drilling on you because it drips on you in the middle of the darkness.
And that was at Disney?
Yeah, that was at Disney. Now, wow, they've since, you know, did away with it. Now it's like, you know, freaking some kind of cartoonish,
I don't know, that could be pretty scary too. Thing,
but, you know, it was definitely not on the par that I can remember this being, which I think it kind of speaks down to, you know, where we see society go as a whole, you know, in a lot of facets.
Well, going back to like the spinoffs or spoofs of it, I loved how Sigourney Weaver came back and kind of reprised the whole alien aspect when she did her part in Paul as the head of the organization trying to hunt down Paul.
Yeah.
And that was definitely a reference towards Alien, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. She's, like I said, Sigourney Weaver's like been in every cool, I mean, Ghostbusters.
And a woman who is aging very aliens. Fine, if you ask me.
So.
Yeah, that Paul's a good movie. But yeah, the and like I said, like you said, it spawned comic books, video games, even the what is it, Batman versus the Predator and Aliens and stuff too.
Was
I mean, there's even been Superman versus Aliens comic that was. It was pretty weird.
I didn't know a Batman alien. I'm gonna look that one. Remember Batman versus Predator? I'm gonna look for the alien.
Yeah,
alien.
I may be mistaken on it because I know there is a Superman versus Aliens.
I'm not questioning you. I'm just saying I'm gonna have to look for that one. I did like the Batman versus Predator, especially in when they kind of bow down to him. That was pretty badass.
But in the sequel to Aliens is probably one of the greatest sci-fi films of all time, and that's I think they're. From what little I've heard about the new movie they're talking about doing, it's going to have some of the original. I think they're kind of skipping over Alien 3 or something. And so whatever the head of the Space Marines guys, it was in Aliens 2, the guy from Terminator is supposed to be in it. And, of course, Scorny Weaver's going to be back. And so, yeah, it's going to be an interesting movie.
Yeah, I'll definitely be curious to check that one out. And, you know, I got to get around to watching Alien again because while we were preparing for the episode, that was one that I missed out on, and it's been a number of years since I saw it, and, you know, talking about it, and, you know, the flashbacks I have of the film and stuff, definitely need to go back and revisit.
Yeah, you guys are really bad about this. Every time you guys talk about something, I got to go back and watch movies. No, thanks. Now I got to go do an Alien run. Appreciate that. There goes my days off for the next couple weeks.
That's why we plan these episodes 6 months in advance, so we have time to do our research. All right, so back to you, your manufacture date.
So
what do we got?
I guess since my manufacture date, since we're going back, to the future.
Gonna go back in time. So we got your DeLoreans, folks.
Yeah, my obsession with freaking cinematic vehicles and such. I've got to get a DeLorean model put together.
You gonna decorate it like the one in Ready Player One, put the Ghostbuster logos on the
dude,
side.
Dude, I'm going to put the freaking Ghostbuster.
I haven't gone that far. Appreciate that. Did y'all see that picture of the DeLorean that was on floating around the internet? It has a license plate on it. It says, yes, it is.
There's one that comes around line. I've seen it at Dragon Con. It's like fully decked out with the lights and everything. It looks like the Back to the Future DeLorean.
Nice. But like I was saying, though, is if you saw a DeLorean, you'd go, is that a DeLorean? And the tag says, it is. That's just, I would definitely do that. I would pay the extra hundreds and hundreds of dollars to get a custom tag that said, it is, if I was driving a DeLorean. Of course, if I had a DeLorean, I could afford the extra tag.
Yeah.
Mine would just say, these nuts. But you were saying, Back to the Future.
Yeah. I mean, you know, directed by Steven Spielberg, or produced by Steven Spielberg, Michael J. Fox, Christopher Lloyd, Leah Thompson, Crispin Glover. I mean, just a whole host of, very talented cast. And, you know, this is a very good, feel-good movie. I mean,
fun.
Yeah, very fun. I mean, it definitely appeals to the adventurous, space exploration or, what could be out there and, it's
that's
crazy.
Heavy, man. That's heavy.
I know. That's deep, right? I mean,
it's heavy.
So I think it's one of the first movies, too. I remember them, actually filming all three movies, at the same time. They filmed it as, one really long movie and then broke it up for a release. And,
oh, I didn't know they did that.
Yeah. I don't remember people actually, doing stuff like that.
Because they have, very long separations between them, so I didn't realize that they did that. That's kind of cool. Thank you. I learned something new.
Yeah, I mean, this was, I think, this was the most successful film of the year, grossing more than $383 million worldwide. So, dude, that's...
And really,
buku of money for 1985.
It made cool for white kids to skateboard.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for my hoverboard. I can't even skateboard, but I still want a hoverboard.
I mean, that's the thing about so many of these 80 movies, right? I mean, they're looking into the future, and it's been 20 years, and we still don't have that. Why?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I call bullshit, too, because, this is the year, 2015 was, and, the second one where he goes to the future.
Yep.
This is the year he went to, and there's no fucking hoverboards, there's no flying cars.
I'm kind of, you do kind of remind me of Biff a little bit, the future Biff, so I kind of want to get you that metal hat that he wore.
Metal hat's pretty sweet. I mean, that's one thing they have. Nike has released the self-tying shoes from Back to the Future.
Oh, they did?
Too.
I know they were working them.
Yeah,
you
can actually get them in limited release. And I think you can even get the hat, the weird hat that he had.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, this is just overall freaking fun film. I mean, you know, this is, I guess once again, you know, this can kind of go into that whole coming of age era. I mean, you know, you got Marty McFly, you know, aspiring musician dating, you know, the girl from Jennifer Parker from Hill Valley, California. And, you know, basically, you know, Marty's dad just getting bullied and pushed over by his boss left and right and everything. Marty's kind of a little bit of the rebel, the outlaw, not afraid to get his hands dirty. And
yeah, then he comes back, teaches people how to skateboard and teaches people about rock and roll in the
You know, when they're at the freaking, you know, dance and, you know, the guitarist or whatever gets injured and, you know, Marty gets up there and starts wailing on the guitar, just some, like, straight up rock and roll that, you know, these people have not seen before. And, I mean, they're just like, they don't know whether to be afraid or to be like, this is the coolest thing we've ever heard.
You know, in this time of rebooting everything, if they rebooted it now, would he, like, go back and teach people about dubstep or death metal? Can you see him getting up at the 50s and they're like, "Bola Lida."
Meta! I mean, it was the 80s era. I mean, you know, 80s is, you know, you had such a big metal scene. And, I mean, yeah, the 80s was big for metal as well as punk. I mean, you had The Clash and all kinds of other bands out there, freaking Slayer on the metal side. And
that's like one of the first movies that I think I saw, like, skateboarding kind of being heavily shown in.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know,
I mean, there was like skate movies, but that was like the first time it kind of became like real mainstream. I don't know how many kids got killed trying to, like, you know, ride on the back of a car with a skateboard because of that movie.
I mean I can definitely vouch that. I mean, there was not so much skateboarding because that was never my forte, you know, I mean, I could definitely remember, you know, my BMX bike and there'd be a car cruising down the street. I mean, you just grab a bumper or something like that and cruise behind. But I mean, I definitely had friends that skated and, you know, whether it was rollerblades, skateboards, whatever. Yeah, I mean, you did it just as a way to get around. And yeah, I mean, that once again kind of speaks to the time. That you do that nowadays, it'd be vandalism of property or child endangerment.
You're going to jail, boy.
Or, you know.
Or back when, like, you know, going 88 miles per hour was like a big thing.
Yeah, I mean, now we got, you know, freaking...
Let's see if these guys can do 88.
Well, you know, 400's called 400 because that's the speed limit, apparently.
Well, I mean, you know, that's the whole stigma about living here in Atlanta, right? You get on an interstate or anything, you better go ahead and just act like you're on the Daytona 500.
Well, they say here in Georgia that the highway numbers are actually the speed limit. So if you're on 75, do 75. If you're on 400, do 45, or do 400. If you're on 85, do 85.
285.
Yeah, I mean, was there a special significance and the number 88 in the film, or was that just...
Well, that's how fast he had to go to kick in the time circuits.
You know, for the time circuits, but I mean, did that... I don't remember any foreshadowing or anything.
No, that's just how fast he had to go. You know, and then at the end, he's like, "Doc, there's not enough rooms to get up to 88 miles per hour." He's like, "We're going, we don't need roads."
I think we've used that as a closing quote on a...
And the Mr. Few, you know, at the first, he's having to use actual, like, you know, nuclear power that he stole from was it Iranians or something?
Plutonium he stole from plutonium. The Iranians. They found me.
So in like the second, like, he goes to the future and gets like a home, like, nuclear reactor thing that you can just put your garbage in and make nuclear material.
Wouldn't that be nice to
the
buy
Mr. Fusion
off of banana peels? And we thought they were only for compost.
That's a shitty idea.
Dude, if we could do that, I'd just fart in my gas tank. I'd be good to go.
That and how he, like, when he first goes back to the future, it's the Twin Pines Mall. But when he goes into the past, he hits one of the trees and kills it. So when he goes back to the future, it's the Lone Pine Mall.
Yeah. Dude, I never noticed that. I'm going to have to go back and watch that. That's awesome. Yeah. Hey, did you see that recreation? They did that whole, they redid the scene with Lego and stop animation of Doc trying to plug the wire back in.
No.
You know, on the clock tower. You know the scene I'm talking about? Yeah, they did that in stop animation with Lego, and it's fucking hilarious.
I just remember that the original gag of him building the model of the town to demonstrate how they're going to, you know, use the lightning to power up the time. And then he used it like all the other movies. Even the Old West, he's built like a model of the town.
Yes.
So how they're when the, you know, when they get to Back to the Future 3.
Then there was that terrible cartoon they did after Back to Future 3. We'll leave it at that.
I don't even remember it.
It was awful.
All right, so let's go jump in the TARDIS and go back to the past again. Speaking of car movies, the original Mad Max.
Dude.
Because I had seen Thunderdome and Road Warrior a lot, but it's been a long time since I watched the original.
Thunderdome, that doesn't count.
Dude, Thunderdome is awesome.
No, Road Warrior was the best one.
Shut your face.
Everybody wants the knife boomerang. Yeah. I'm afraid of losing my fingers too, but I still want one.
Yeah, that original movie is one of the... It held a Guinness record for most profitable film. I mean, they made it for like, I think, $300,000. It made like $100 million. It was Mel Gibson's second movie. I mean, it was...
Yeah, I mean, this is one I think that an definitely Australian put him on the map. But yeah, I mean, you know, I like the very post-apocalyptic, you know, style world they're living in and everything else. And I think you saw that in a lot of the late 70s, early 80s movies.
Yeah, I mean, it was almost like pre-apocalyptic. Yeah, I mean, like, they were running out of gas and power, and, like, the world was going to shit, but it hadn't, like, fully, you know, fallen apart completely yet.
Not really pre-apocalyptic. It was, like, the beginning, like, right after it happened.
So...
How would you say that? Yeah,
it's not pre, it's not post, it's actual apocalyptic.
You know what I'm saying, right, Joe?
Yeah. It was still kind of in the downfall of society, and he was, you know, played one of the
cops that went rogue to go revenge
main
his family.
Force patrol. It was riding around in those Ford Falcons.
I mean, which, if I could get my hands on a Ford Falcon these days, that'd be a pretty sweet car to try to rebuild, I think.
It's been a while, but wasn't he trying to revenge his family on that one?
Well, that's what happened is his... there's this biker gang that all, like I said, running, because it's Australia, running Kawasaki's and cars you've never seen before. But they, like, his partner ends up getting killed, and they arrest this one guy, and but everybody's too afraid to show up. So
which I think it's
they release
funny, because the gang member that actually kills the, you know, officer is dubbed Knight Rider.
Yeah, that's the guy they're chasing at the first of the film.
Yep.
But yeah, he eventually gets kind of fed up with it and decides he wants to leave the force. Well, they run into that biker gang, and that biker gang kills his... Well, she doesn't die, but she's, like, really jacked up and ends up killing his kid. So he goes back and takes the last patrol car they'd been, like, working on. It was, like, the last of the V8s, and just goes batshit and hunts down, like, the entire biker gang. And I swear, the last, like, hour of the movie, there's almost no dialogue. It's all car chases and, like, you know, gunfights.
Yeah, I mean, it is a very action-packed film.
Yeah, there's just long segments of no dialogue. It's just cars driving and people shooting stuff. I swear the script for that movie had to be, like, 10 pages long because there's so much, like, silence in the movie.
It was a good movie, but, again, I still say I like Road Warrior better.
The Knight Rider!
And I guess it was just... it was more the... Road Warrior had more action.
Yeah.
And it was more the... Less talking. But you ever wonder maybe that... you guys were talking... Well, it's a couple episodes back. You guys talked about the Quentin episode. And do you ever think maybe they got some of the ideas for the car one?
Death Race.
Death Race. You ever think they got some of the ideas from Road Warrior on that?
Especially those final... those final sequence in Death Proof or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Death Proof, not Death Race. Yeah. What the hell did I pull? Dude, I just...
Well, there is a movie called... No, there's a movie called Death Race.
There's a whole series, Death Race, with Jason Statham.
No, before that. There's like a 70s one with...
yeah, because that was a...
David Carradine. Yeah, he played Frankenstein in the originals.
Really? I'm going to have to go find
Death
that
Race
one.
3000.
I'm going to have to find that one. Thank you.
But
which also has Sylvester Stallone.
Oh, yeah, that was I mean, the other day, I think, was the first time I had watched the film, and, I mean, I was hooked from the instant I started watching
Back up. You just now watched Road Warrior?
No.
No, not Road
Mad Max, yeah.
Just the other day. I'm ashamed.
I mean, I'm young.
He's only 30.
Still, I'm young. I'm ashamed.
I mean...
Thought we raised you better than that.
Well, you failed as a parental figure.
That's why we started the podcast to introduce Brad to like classic films.
I mean, so it's been very edutainment.
All right, edutainment. I'll let us slide this one, but next one, We're going to take you out back and beat you with a hose.
I get 3 lashings.
That's because we've been talking about doing an episode on cigars and film. And that's one that, like, I noticed it more that we've been thinking about the idea of people smoking in that movie. It was, I mean, the chief or whatever in the main force patrol was smoking stogies through the whole thing. It was so much the point that, like, when I was watching the credits at the end, they actually thanked some cigar company for supplying all the cigars in the movie.
I mean, you know, it's something that you see a lot in the older films, you know, that, I mean, you're just... Unfortunately, we just don't have the smoking culture these days.
It's coming back.
I mean, that was the old way of like to show someone's a badass in a movie. Oh, that dude's smoking a cigar. You know he's a badass. Whether he's a villain or a good guy.
Isn't that why we started smoking cigars?
Well, unfortunately, yeah. Because the whole
need to improve my image.
The whole I hate to say it, but like the Sopranos kind of knocked it down. It made if you smoke cigars, you're a criminal. That's kind of what hey, cigars man. Have kind of come
we
out
gangsta,
to be.
Gangsta motherfucker.
I mean, we got hats, we got baller, we got, I mean,
dude, I want strap. I want to be a gangster, so I fuck mean, y'all, you know. But, you know,
you don't make no money in the honest world.
Exactly. I don't make money, period. Shit.
That's why we got to watch all these Vigilante movies. I'm sick. I quit.
Take a drink.
Quick. Chug.
That's a big beer to chug. Don't do that.
That's another rule in the cigar nerd drinking game. When Brad mispronounced something, take a drink.
Dude, I'm coming down off of like a 4-day binge of strep throat, all right?
And then what do we give them? We give them a Sweetwater Happy Ending 9% beer. There you go.
Hey, I had my Guinness, and the Guinness made me feel good. This is helping me feel even better, so.
All right, so what's your next 80s
montage? It's your turn,
montage?
Isn't it?
No, Mad Max 79.
Oh, okay, we're back to Brad.
We're back, and things are about to get a little weird.
How weird?
We're going to tie weird and science all together.
Classic.
Weird science.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, once again, 1985. This is written and directed by John Hughes.
So, therefore, you know it's a great movie.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like, it's been so long since I watched this movie, I forgot how great it is. I mean, it so holds up. I mean, I was hooked from the minute I started watching this again.
I have to laugh. I watched that one about a couple months ago. And I was thinking to myself, and again, I'm a little older than Joe. Not much, but a little older than Joe. And I was like, my parents let me watch this? What the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, how else are you going to learn about the birds and the bees?
Yeah, I mean, Anthony Michael Hall, Ian Mitchell Smith, and, of course, Kelly LeBrock.
In the cutoff sweatshirt.
God, she's still hot. I was like, I forgot how hot she was.
She made the underboob nice.
You little maniacs want to do first?
Yeah. And I mean, that was crazy too. I mean, you know, basically the premise of the movie, you got these, you know, two nerds couldn't, you know, get a girl to save their life. So what do? They put their talents to work and they, you know, come up with some computer generated, you know, girl that just.
And I think like in the 80s, we still knew so little about computers that it was almost plausible.
Yeah.
It was something like I said, the computers were so mysterious then, you know, not a lot of people had home computers back then that. You can almost think, you know, if I had like enough, you know, processing power, I might be able to do this whole Frankenstein experiment and bring this a Barbie to life.
You might be able to do that with 3D printing. I don't know. We're talking about weird science. I kind of feel like we should have bras on our head.
No.
Good. I really don't want to wear a bra on my head.
Don't lie.
I only do that on Thursdays. Oh, shit.
Yeah. I'm going to set yourself up for that one.
And the thing I noticed about this movie is, like, in the first 5 minutes, they tell the entire story of the movie. Like, when they're in the gym, like, watching the
gymnastics class, team, you know.
And the guy starts having his fantasy. He's like, yeah, he's like, we're gonna become, like, really popular. I don't know, go out, have a good time, have some drinks. And then we're going to throw some major party that makes us legendary. And when the smoke clears, those girls are going to fall madly in love with us. And that's exactly what happens in the course of the movie.
Yeah.
He's, like, everything in his little fantasy segment is pretty much the...
Except they forgot that the brother's going to be turned into some creepy monster.
Yeah, he's like something like
turns into, like, some toad or something like that.
Who's a total dick, though. And, it, you know, speaking of Alien, you know, it's Bill Paxton from Aliens plays the dick older brother.
Which it was so weird, too, seeing Bill Paxton that young and everything.
Another cigar guy. He smokes cigars through the whole movie,
too. I mean, I mean, that's why we are the Cigar Nerd Podcast.
Gotta find a cigar in there somewhere, and that's great.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, that, I mean, and when they first go out, she takes them out to, like, some club, and it's like, they're like, we're probably gonna get our asses kicked. But then they just, like, you know, man up, get drunk, and like party with these like dude. And I noticed one of the guy, the gangster dudes they're partying with, one of them is the and I can't remember the actor's name, but he's like a staple of 80s action movies. He played the black sergeant in American Ninja. He was one of the guys that they're partying with at the bar.
That's awesome.
Jackson or something, I think his name is. But yeah, like I said, that guy shows up in all kind of 80s action movies later on. But yeah, when they're like, you know, he pretty much starts singing the blues and telling them about his life and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one film that, you know, really came to mind is Frankenstein, just the way that, you know, the turn of events happen and everything.
I mean, watching Frankenstein in the movie, but that's pretty much what it is a modern, you know, retelling of Frankenstein nearly. But she looks a lot better than Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah, and the ability to, you know, basically alter people's memories to, you know, forget and everything. I mean, it's... Go ahead.
Did you ever notice that when they were creating her, that they created her on the Board of Life?
Yeah.
Yes. I hated that game.
Well, no, the concept was they were bringing life.
Yeah, I mean, I understand, but I'm just saying I hated that game because
it never ends.
I never ended up with multiple wives or anything. I just ended up with a car full of kids. And
I like playing Crack House, the game.
It's not Muslim, and it's not Mormon, so there is no extra wives in the game.
Like, so now, I like playing Crack House, the game, because it's Board of the Life in reverse. You start off with a job, a family, and a wife, and by the end of it, you lose everything.
Meth, well, not even once.
Isn't that just like the tales of the 21st century?
Oh, and of course, modern hero Robert Downey Jr. is also one of the high school dicks that they have to deal with.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, which that was pretty much his part in the 80s. He was always either the weird best friend or the, you know, guy that was bagging on the protagonist.
That was just pre-drug era, right? Or was that the beginning of drug era?
I don't know. That was like middle of the 80s when his, like, you know, when before his height of fame.
Before,
like,
he got caught.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's crazy later on in the movie, too, the part where, you know, the guys are all joking around and they're like, yeah, you know, she'll do anything or we can create her to be anything. So they, like, go to, you know, give her, you know, enhanced breast or something like that. And they program the computer, but they forget to connect her. And instead, they freaking resurrect a ballistic missile coming up out of the bedroom.
Yeah, she's like, and y'all's like, you know, rush to try to take over the world. Y'all forgot one thing. Like, we forgot to hook up the doll. And the leads, like, fall in this old Time magazine with a story about, like, you know, nuclear war. And it just makes this whole missile in the house. And then she's like, well, her whole point is she's trying to turn them into men. So she's like, well, maybe if, you know, everything else hasn't helped, I'm going to create villains for them to stand up to. So this gang busts into the house party and tries to take over. And speaking of Mad Max, it's the gang from Road Warriors. Is the one that actually invade his party. It's the actual gang from Road Warriors.
That's right. I remember the bikers. I just couldn't remember where I knew them from.
Oh, and we were talking about, you know, Chet being transformed. It was actually a pile of shit he was transformed into.
With arms.
Except arms and legs. So he looked kind of like a weird frog. And at one point, he eats a fly that's flying around him. So I thought he was like some kind of frog instead of a pile of shit.
So, yeah, I mean... But, yeah, I mean, and it's crazy, too, you know, all the bad shit that happens and everything else, you know, basically, you know, Lisa's like, nope, everything will return to normal, you know, after she realizes that the boys have become men and, you know, have learned their lessons and no longer trying to play God.
So does that mean you're going to try to bring a Barbie to life so you can become a man, Brad?
I mean
we got better computers. We could probably do it.
Yeah, it's not going to go good, though. I mean.
But you should bring a Leia action figure to life. I mean, have you seen? I think we talked about on the Star Wars parody episode the fan film Hughes the Force, where it mixes it's like a parody of weird science with like mixing with like some Star Wars themed stuff.
And I don't know.
I love that video.
I kind of have to disagree with you, Leia. Back then, yes, but have you seen Carrie Fisher lately?
Well, they're not a modern Carrie Fisher action figure. You would have to use the slave Leia.
She's
at all.
Eventually going to turn that way.
Yeah, you got a good 30 years before that happens.
Kind of off note, but you said Leia, so you made me think of that. Did you hear about her big protest when episode 1 came out?
No.
She got all mad because when they filmed Star Wars, George Lucas didn't let her wear a bra. He said, there's no bras in space. And then episode 1 came out, and Amidala had all this outfit, and of course she had a bra on. And she's like, wait, what the fuck? Wait a second here.
That's because George Lucas is a smooth mofo. Or at least back in the 70s he was.
Smooth. She really wasn't hot in... the original Star Wars. Then she, by Return of the Jedi.
Slave Leia.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
But still not as good.
Every
as,
young geek's fantasy.
Still not as good as Jennifer Aniston in the Slave Leia outfit for Friends. That was hot.
I don't remember saying that. You remember seeing Fanboys.
Joe's just too cool to say he watched Friends.
No. I did not.
I think I all right, watched
anyway.
All episodes of Friends. Oh, yeah, that's because Rachel freaking spent 3 weeks watching Friends.
It's Jennifer Aniston. I'll watch it.
So we'll switch gears. Joe, going back to...
on topic here. Let's get to talk about some horror since, you know, we've talked a lot of sci-fi. Likes and
horror. We just talked about a horror. Oh, wait.
Horror.
Ah.
The triple R's.
I see.
Multiple horrors, in other words.
Yeah. Phantasm. That is one of the absolutely weirdest fucking movies. I forgot how weird that movie was.
It is, you know, because it's crazy, too. I mean, it starts out almost like you would envision a modern slasher film. You know, two teenagers frolicking about in a cemetery, and all of a sudden, boob shot.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it pans into the story, and you're like,
turns into the monster who, like, stabs the guy.
I don't remember a monster. All I remember are the floating orbs that shot, that popped out a blade and stuck in your head and drained you.
I mean, there was a couple of those, but that really didn't become a big part until the later movies. I mean, there was a couple of them in this movie. Mainly it's like Angus Grimm, and you don't even know what the story of the movie is. Apparently he's taking the recent dead and turning them into zombies. And then it turns out that he's like an alien or something, and for some reason he has to make them small because of the other planet he sent him to has high gravity. It's like,
well,
the most convoluted,
I think they're probably full size, but you know, once they get, you know, processed through the portal due to the gravity, you know, it compresses them.
And they look like demonic Jawas, because most of the time you just see them in like these little robes. You don't actually see them like, you know, as people. They're like these little robe dudes that run around like killing people, and it's like evil Jawas.
That's just creepy now.
I mean, it was so bizarre. Like I said, it's a horror movie, and it has tiny zombies, and now they're aliens.
Well,
and
Jawas were creepy anyways, if you ask me.
No way. Jawas are cool.
But yeah, I mean, I guess a modern reference. The tall man, you think this is a precursor to Slender Man?
Probably. And then, like, you know, there's this whole weird dream sequence at the end of the movie where the kid, like, wakes up, and you're like, was the whole movie
a dream?
All this stuff happen? You know, because the Reggie guy that was like the, you know, stereotypical bald guy with the ponytail, you know, he dies, and then you wake up and like, no, your brother died in a car accident, and I'm raising you now, and all that stuff that you said happened didn't happen, but then the tall man shows up again and attacks. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, it's all over the place. It's so a mindfuck of a movie. It really is.
I mean, it's become an occult classic, but it's just... And spawned like four sequels. I think there's even a fifth movie they're talking about making, but it's...
I was going to say, I thought they were talking about another one.
But yeah, it was...
Yeah, they announced it in 2014. And I think they were going to... It's going to be like a direct-to-video
I think the last couple were direct-to-videos.
You know, I'd say a lot of direct-to-video movies are pretty good. They're cheesy, but they're good and enjoyable.
And in the first one, there's like the flying silver balls that like stab you and then drill you and drain your blood. Which those become like a bigger thing in like the later movies.
Yeah, I mean, you see a couple of them in the mausoleum.
So
I mean,
stuff.
But I mean, you know,
and that
they're
the,
not
the
very
door. The door creeped me out always.
Yeah. And then his brother, no one believes the kid at first, and he breaks into the mausoleum and cuts off the tall man's fingers and
just yellow
and captures one.
Yeah,
yeah, they're, for some reason they don't.
Was creepy.
They all bleed like honey mustard sauce. And he takes the finger home in a cigar box.
Great, you just ruined my Zaxby's chicken fingers.
And he's like, brother won't believe him. He's like, see, look, I got this. He opens the box and the little finger's like still wiggling. He's like, all right, I believe you now. Let's call the sheriff.
And speaking of friggin' Zaxby's chicken tenders.
I pull out chicken tenders. Sorry, I haven't eaten.
And then the freaking thing turns into this weird demonic fly. I mean, the movie had
dude,
so
that fly is badass.
Stuff.
I mean, it's like dragging them through the house, and they try to, you know, shove it through the garbage disposal of all things. I mean, they had the freaking 12-gauge, and they don't, you know.
And what's up with Angus Grimm turning into a girl to lure people in? That's like the weird... Now, I can understand, you know, pretending to be a girl to lure in the people to kill him. But then he has sex with him before he turns back into a dude and kills him. I'm like, couldn't you just killed him before you did the whole sex thing? I mean, that's just kind of weird.
Maybe he had to make sure they weren't virgins.
Yeah. and
you know, most people want virgin sacrifices, sacrifice, but they didn't want virgin. They wanted unvirgin sacrifices.
That makes odd sense.
Tainted meat.
Tainted meat. Bob.
He needed more protein in his diet.
Oh, God.
But, it was crazy, too, you know, just, you know, the 12-gauge, I mean, whether it be the zombies, phantasm, or whatever, it's got to go to, I mean, just the random, you know, 12-gauge shootouts, you know, where they freaking, you know,
put like three rounds to the horse, out the 1911 45. He's like, I don't care who you are, your government issue 45 is going to put you down, and you stay down. The most, like, random thing, but I was like, damn right it does.
Damn it. We're talking about closing quote. That would have been a good one.
Yeah. I'll figure out something before we get there. Well, you still got anything from the 80s?
Yeah, I got probably the most popular movie of the group here.
I say one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, I mean, this is truly adventure comedy, and with no further ado, The Goonies.
Goonies never die, man.
So, you know.
Baby Ruined.
You know, written by Chris Columbus, you know.
Directed by Richard Donner.
Yep.
Spielberg, executive producer.
What a freaking phenomenal team. I mean, you know, you got,
yeah.
I mean, a very eclectic group of, you know.
I mean, Richard Donner, Superman. I mean, he made some awesome movies, but in this little kid adventure comedy with, you know, for you modern geeks, Sean Astin from Lord of the Rings. And
yeah, and they don't live in the boondocks. They live in the goondocks, which I thought was an awesome play.
Joe, you going to go do the truffle shuffle for us?
No. But I will kick you in the nuts if you say that again.
Somebody had to say it.
But, yeah, I mean, you know.
And on his last appearance on the Cigar Nerd
podcast. Y'all hate me but love me. It's a love-hate relationship.
So, yeah, I mean, basically, you know, the kids' parents are facing foreclosure, and, you know, they up it, rummaging in the attic, and they find a old 17th century map. And
I always wanted to find a pirate map when I was a kid.
Yeah, I've rummaged through my attic. I didn't find a pirate map either. I found a bunch of insulation. I
found an Atari.
Sweet.
Not to be racist here, but wasn't the Asian kid? Wasn't the same kid from Indiana?
I don't remember if that's him or not.
Because all I remember is $50 bill, $50 bill.
Pinchers Apparel.
I loved every time he talked. I was just like, that's freaking awesome.
Booby traps.
I saw a kid at Dragon Con that dressed up as
Data.
Yeah. I mean, he had the Pinchers Apparel thing. He had the boxing glove that would come out of his belt and stuff. It was pretty epic.
But yeah, I mean, you know, the other thing is there's so much light-hearted but crude humor. I mean, you know, you got the head pirate, One-Eyed Willie. Like, yeah. I mean, what?
Oh, when you removed the patch, that was just, oh, that's why they call you One-Eyed Willie.
Why did you think they called him One-Eyed? Yeah, and of course, Sloth.
Sloth, yeah.
Sloth.
Hey, you guys!
Yeah, and
Superman shirt.
Sloth love chump.
That is by far probably, I'd have to agree, that is probably my favorite 80s movie, and it never gets old.
Yeah, I mean, I've got the 25th anniversary Blu-ray. And if you've not, you know, I'm kind of a special features nerd. I like watching those behind the scenes stuff. Pick up the Blu-ray and for the audio commentary, because it has all the kids as adults. I mean, it was like they recorded a brand new commentary track for the Blu-ray. So you get to hear them as adults talk about the shit they went through making that movie.
That's awesome. But yeah, I mean, the premise is basically they're trying to prevent foreclosure. They find the map. They go to this, you know, country club or something.
There's some country club trying to expand, and they're trying to foreclose on all their houses so they can expand the country club and run off all the poor kids.
Yeah, and they go to this little restaurant and, you know, figure out there's some crime family there running a counterfeit operation, and, you know, basically, you know, they send Chunk, and poor Chunk, man, his stories and everything out there are so far-fetched that nobody believes the kid.
I puked, and everyone else puked. And I think one of my favorite gags in that movie is when Corey Feldman speaks fluent Spanish. So they hire a Spanish maid to help them pack.
Don't go in the attic. It's my parents' sex dungeon.
Yeah. He's like, and if you go in that room, they will beat you and lock you in the pantry. And he's telling her all this, like, horrible shit.
Yeah. You know, the whole time the mom's like, okay, come on, come with me, come get groceries. She's like, after this shit, you want me to go get groceries? Like,
And then they break the dick off her statue and stuff like, that's my mom's favorite part.
And they put it on upside down.
It's like, you know, the older brother's like, you did it wrong. If you were to take a piss, you'd just piss right in your face.
Oh, that movie has so much great stuff.
Only when
in
I'm
it.
Drunk.
Not even when I'm drunk.
Just don't do handstands. Yeah, that, oh man, I love that movie so much.
But yeah, I mean, there was almost, you know, it almost had an Indiana Jones type feel, you know, as they're going through the cave and all the booby traps and everything else that's being set off. And
I see that. It was an Indiana Jones lowered to a kid's level. And actually, I think Goonies actually influenced a lot of movies today because they have a lot of movies. I have kids, so I watch a lot of these movies with my kids, and they have a lot of these movies that are like Indiana Jones or Goonies with these kids going on adventures.
That's one thing I liked about this movie because even though it was a kid's cast, it wasn't a kid's movie. I mean, they treated them as adults nearly. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, there's, you know, language,
I mean,
and
a few cussing, you know, scenes.
They didn't speak down to him. They didn't try to make it a family film.
But take another drink. Joe mispronounced a word.
But at the same time, it is still a family friendly movie. I mean,
to an
now
extent,
you're saying this,
I mean,
that's what I'm doing this week. I'm making my kids watch Goonies with me.
Well, your kids are like, you know, high school age now. They can.
Oh, don't remind me. Fuck you. Shit. I got 115 and 111. Thanks.
Old man.
But
not that far older than you.
All right. Well, as we're kind of, like I said, getting to the end here, you know, is there. Let's talk about, since it is our birthdays.
Do I need to sing?
I can sing. We don't have the rights for that. You get sued for it. But
we don't have the rights for anything
birthday,
we do.
Shut up.
Mr. President.
Speaking of songs, I mean, also the Goonies soundtrack, too. They had an amazing music video for that movie with Cyndi Lauper and Captain Lou Albano and the wrestlers and stuff. The freaking Goonies music videos were hilarious.
And I mean, you know, talking about 80s soundtracks and stuff, I mean, you know, I know it was just before the 80s, but Phantasm had very much that digital, you know, edge to it and stuff in its soundtracks. And I mean, there was, you know, music in the 80s. I mean, I think that was a pivotal, you know, shaping point. I mean, you know, I hear the stuff today and, you know, I'm sorry, as a, you know, audiophile, with enough computer engineering and everything else, you can make anything sound good. But, you know, back then, the artist truly had to have talent. You truly had to, you know, you didn't have a whole lot of the, you know, digital, you know, band-aids that we have. And, I mean,
it
really
also
had a heart behind the music.
Exactly. It was all, like, original. You look at, like,
there's no dubstep
music today, and it's, I don't know. There's some good music out there today.
Although,
but
I will say, you know, really off topic here, but since we're talking about music and we've referenced dubstep so much.
That is your thing, is music.
This latest episode of The Walking Dead with the fucking van and the zombie dubstep music.
Dubstep has survived the apocalypse. And when you're trying not to bring attention to yourself, do you really want to be blasting dubstep in a van?
I mean, but
this could be like zombie freaking attractor right there.
Whatever. If I'm gonna go, then you know, fuck it. I want to go out with a bang.
And stay away from revolving doors.
All right, yeah, we'll leave it at that.
I do have to agree, though. Soundtracks from the '80s were a million times better than soundtracks today.
That's why I love that that mixtape we found with all the '80s action montage soundtracks.
Yes,
it's just like the big soundtrack of the year with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
It was all the older music, and it is better.
Speaking of which, I will be going this weekend to buy that on vinyl.
Nice.
Well, now that you're, like I said, you've started your 30s, is there anything you're like, man, I'm too old for this shit now? Is there anything that's hit you that, like, wow, this is
grocery shopping?
This is old.
Yeah, paying bills, having a job, car payments,
working.
The thing for me that I'm like, you know, full on Murtaugh about, where I'm like, I'm too old for this shit, Riggs, is the freaking people who play video games on YouTube and like, you know, Twitch and shit. I'm like, I don't get watching someone else play a video game.
I mean, I can get it from the aspect that, all right, you know what, maybe I'm stuck on a level, I can
use...
The
thing is, they're not even like tips and trick videos. It's like, you sit there for an hour watching somebody just play a game.
Well, I mean, that's like, I mean... You know, once again, kind of touching on Ready Player One and some of the other stuff is...
Which I'm reading right now, really good book.
You know, role-playing games in general. Like, people are like, oh my god, you can fish, you can, you know, run around and do...
Yeah, I'm like, you're outside.
I'm like, I can go be outside right fish, now, bitch. And there's a lake down the street I could go fish in. Like,
that's one thing where I'm like...
kind of boggles my mind.
I'm too old for that. I don't get that shit anymore.
So, I mean, unless you have, you know, some kind of objection to vitamin D and, you know, sunlight, maybe everybody's vampires.
Don't you
I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't you know most of these kids today are vampires? They don't go outside and play.
That, and you know, like I said, I'm turning 36 this year, and I'm
old fart.
I'm like I said, I still got a couple days before my birthday hits, and I'm totally depressed about it. Like one of our friends at the cigar shop, Lindsay, the other day said, "Oh, you know, your 30s are your prime." I'm like, if this is my prime, I'm just going to kill myself now because I'm like, I feel so far from prime right now. I was like, please tell me it gets better than this.
Joe, let's have your birthday party at Chuck E. Cheese.
They don't serve beer there, so no.
Yeah, actually, I don't consider that beer, but they do have alcoholic beverages. They have Bud Light on tap.
I'll get drunk and punch the mouse. No, it's...
Well, what if we got a stripper to be the mouse?
Hmm. Yeah, that's too much like a furry. I'm like, no, I'm not going to no furry con with you.
You don't want to... STD's bad enough. You don't want to end up with a bubonic, you know, plague.
But then again, I'm all for somebody building a adult version of Chuck E. Cheese's where it's... You can get drunk and jump in a ball crawl.
Yeah,
there should be adult ball crawls. I mean,
I think
and Velcro wall. We gotta have yes. Velcro wall.
Party buses.
Okay.
Like we found our new business. We need to start.
Long as there's good beer, none of that Bud Light shit.
All right. Well, I think that'll about wrap us up. If like I said, you want to give us a birthday present, share this episode, like our Facebook page, spread the word. And we'll be right back with Beer 30.
Stay tuned.
Almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back to Beer 30.
Yeah, we got a special treat. Look at there. We treated ourselves this time around.
Yeah, since this is the birthday episode, we need to drink something good.
So, what better way than to go out and buy yourself a $35 bottle of beer?
$35 bottle of beer is on the wall.
I can honestly say this is the most expensive bottle of beer that I bought. So, with no further ado, here it is, the official Cigar Nerd review of Guinness, the 1759.
Oh, yeah. It's a special edition Guinness that they've produced as kind of an anniversary special edition or whatever. It comes in a bottle, looks like a champagne bottle with like a cork and everything. You do not expect it to be a Guinness when you pull it out of the box.
Yeah, I mean, and the box itself, I mean, it's nice, decorative, it's a velvet box. I mean, it makes an awesome gift. The only problem is, it's such a limited production. I think there's only like 90,000 bottles of these. I know the liquor store that I had special order these for us. I think they ended up with like a case of six, and you know the guy's like, "Yeah, we posted on Facebook and sold out." Like, you know, within I think it was like 3 or 4 hours or something.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tim got like a big order. I mean, he sold most of those in a couple days.
Yeah. So, I mean, as far as taste and everything else, this is not your traditional Guinness. Obviously, by the price tag, but also too, this almost drinks more like a barley wine to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not a stout. It's a amber ale, so it's definitely got a little bit more of that fruity taste.
Yeah,
to it.
I mean, you know, to me, I'm getting more caramel and you know butterscotch and You know, this beer is brewed with fine peated whiskey malt, just like those used in, you know, some of the best whiskey and scotches for you folks familiar with single malts and things, which probably another reason why I really enjoy this beer is you do, you know, it comes in at an ABV of, you know, 9%, which is much higher than your traditional Guinness.
Stout for a Guinness as far as the ABV goes.
So, you know, the alcohol taste on the back end of the throat, I mean, it's a nice touch.
Yeah, this is basically before Alec Guinness got into brewing stouts and porters. He was, like, kind of famous for his amber ales, and this is kind of inspired by that original recipes that he perfected back in the day before, you know, making what we consider the greatest thing ever, you know, regular Guinness.
Yeah. I mean, it is my go-to drink. I mean, if I go to a bar and they've got Guinness on tap, I mean, 9 times out of 10, it's a Guinness I'm going for anyway. So,
and also, we're recording this like while I'm sick, so if I sound like Barry White, no, we're not using any kind of effects. This is my actual voice right now.
I don't know, man. After that blowing smoke intro, you know. But, all right, folks. Well, Joe, as far as your official untapped review, what are you thinking?
Oh, this shit's like a 5 for me.
Yep, I'm right there out of 5. In fact, I was able to unlock a Luck of the Irish badge, and because we were recording this episode on the day of my birthday, which is the 10th, I was able to unlock the birthday badge as well. So, a double bonus. So, $30, 2 untapped badges, I say that's a win.
Sweet.
All right, well, stay tuned for the upcoming segment.
Science. It's time for some science. Are you ready to get edumacated?
I think so, but based on the articles you've chose this week, I'm going to have to deny your plausibility.
Nice.
Your psychology is not phasing me. I don't trust it.
Well, since Brad mentioned that, let's start off with the first article. Apparently, people are more willing to dismiss evidence from psychology than they are from actual neuroscience.
That's MRIs and such.
Yeah, it's like the actual physical study.
So if it comes from a machine programmed by a human, we trust said machine more so than we trust it coming from the actual human who's doing the psychological evaluation.
Well, it's... You know, for psychological tests, it's done with mainly what they call cognitive tests, which are just, as when I was a kid and they described it, a talking doctor, where they just talk to you and ask you questions, make you take tests, and try to come up with some kind of diagnosis just based on that.
What do you see on this piece of paper?
Exactly. And the neuroscience...
I see murderous mayhem. Oh, yeah, you're perfectly sane then.
And the neuroscience is, you know, actual hard science where, you know, brain imaging, you know, actual tests, not just... You know, discussions. A recent study by Jeffrey and Cynthia Monroe, they basically put out this scenario to like 106 students where they were given the exact same scenario that a politician was in trouble and was supposedly had early stages of Alzheimer's, which would have caused him to, you know, have to give up his seat. And, you know, the only difference was, you know, in the study, it was the same amount of education of whoever the expert was, and they were presented with the exact same testimony. But in one version of the scenario, it was a psychologist that had come up with this diagnosis using cognitive tests. And in the other version, it was a neuroscientist that was presenting, you know, MRI data and, you know, brain scans to come up with this diagnosis. And in these two different scenarios, the ones that they use the MRI evidence, 69% of the people believe that, yeah, this guy's, you know, batshit. And in the other one, only 39% agree that you know, that it was plausible that this person had Alzheimer's.
Here's my theory. Humans, we've evolved to be visual learners. You know, we... look and we see tangible objects and we can see, touch, feel, and that changes, you know, our dynamic, because instead of just using the brain, you're now able to use touch, sight, and so many other things. So I wonder if, you know, I sit there and I read you a story just over the air. Are you going to absorb the content of the story and, you know, really comprehend it more so than you physically looking at the book and reading the words on the pages yourselves?
Well, so far, I mean, they don't really think it has anything to do with visual learning bases, you know, other than like reading learning. It's more, but there's definitely like what they consider a bias for hard science over what they consider a soft science. People that are studying, like, you know, to be doctors or biologists like that, they consider the psychology classes to be, you know, fluff and soft classes. And even, you know, going back to like school students, they think the psychology questions are a lot easier than, say, biology or chemistry questions. So, I mean, it's...
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, if I'm sitting down, you know, in front of a psychologist, I mean, I personally, I guess, you know, I'm in a majority of the study, because if, you know, somebody's sitting there trying to analyze me, they're asking me a series of questions, all they're doing is trying to manipulate me into giving a set of answers for them to come up with a diagnosis that they've already predetermined in their head.
Yeah, I mean, it's, when you're looking at psychological evidence, it's, you know, it's hard to see anything concrete, because to the lay person, the diagnosis is based off some dude's opinion. I mean, how could asking me a bunch of questions give you any kind of legitimate result?
You know, I think another good example that comes to
mind. Something
that
you can actually look at a doctor saying, hey, check these charts and whatnot. It's a little more convincing.
Well, let me ask you this. So, you know, you've been with your company for a while. I've been with mine. But I know part of my hiring process was there was a 10-page questionnaire of random scenarios and just questions that were basically a personality index. And I tell you, all right, if you tell me in your job description that this is a team-oriented, you know, environment and blah, 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 then guess what? I know exactly how to manipulate my answers to get a set personality, even though I am very much a loner and prefer to, you know, just handle the shit on my own.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't have respect for psychology that much, because to me, it's kind of bullshit. Like you said, you can kind of manipulate the answers. I've taken psychological tests, and, you know, I studied enough psychology in college that, you know, as soon as they're asking me questions, I'm like, oh, I know what you're trying to do here. The shit you're asking me has nothing to do with what you're looking for. You're looking for how I respond to the questions, you know, whether you can, like, you know, stress me out or whatnot. Yeah, you know, so.
Yeah, I mean, the question is, you know, you're driving to work one morning, knowing that time and punctuality is important. You come across a vehicle with a dead body inside. What do you do? Do you proceed to drive into work, ignoring said body?
I'm like, fuck, that dog's dead. Keep on trucking.
You know, stop. Verify there's no pulse, then continue to work. Or do you immediately call 911, wait for responding officers and, you know, paramedics, and call work and say, hey, I'm going to be late. I've discovered a dead body.
Yeah. Weird. Like, I mean, and then also, like I said, in those, you know, the whole being able to diagnose somebody just from asking them questions, I kind of think's bullshit. But then again, you know, when I was taking some of these classes, we had to, you know, for a project, recreate some of these experiments, psychological experiments. And when you start doing these, some of these experiments, start looking at, you know, conditioning people to respond a certain way, then, you know, it has some legitimacy. Like, you know, it's like reading stuff like the Milgram experiment and some of these psychological experiments where you get people to do stuff that you don't think a normal person would do, or to answer a question that is obviously false just because everyone else in the group says that, oh, that's true. You're like, no, these studies were done a long time ago. These people are fucking idiots. No one could actually, like, respond the way these people would respond. But then once we redid the tests, we got similar results that you could convince people to respond a certain way using, like, you know, psychological tricks and stuff. So, yeah. You know, and even in this, you know, study they did, they found that, the insanity defense, evidence that were given by a psychologist was less convincing than the same evidence given by a psychiatrist, just because a psychiatrist was an actual doctor. Well, even though what they do is similar, there's not much difference, except a psychiatrist can actually prescribe medicine.
So you, with a criminal justice background,
yeah.
I mean, let's say that you're called into trial and somebody has, you know, a bloody knife and says, oh, this is evidence that, you know, we found this knife and it was located in this person's home. Therefore, you know, we have motive, we have a bloody weapon, person's guilty. Or does somebody come with analyzed DNA evidence and say, hey, we've got scientific backing and proof that the DNA on this knife, you know, does not match, you know, the victim and everything. So, I mean, from that standpoint, you know, it's very easy to, you know, dismiss what somebody would have you believe more so than the actual hard scientific evidence of, you know, a legit study or...
Yeah, I mean, I think it all comes back to how what your level of education as well, because to me, who's been a science nerd and studied stuff, you know, actual physical scientific evidence is always more convincing to me than just, you know,
somebody's opinion. Philosophy or opinion. I mean, and at the end of the day, I mean, I you see that a lot now with, you know, schools, right? I mean, it used to be back when I was in elementary school, if you talked or act out or whatever, then guess what? You were sent to the principal's office, you got your ass busted, and you learned to go back to class and be quiet. Now it's, well, let's call in a counselor, and, well, you know, it looks like we're seeing onset of ADHD, so let's just go ahead, and we're going to prescribe some Prozac and some Ritalin and, you know, basically turn this individual into a zombie.
Yeah, I mean, I acted like I didn't get Ritalin. I got my ass kicked back in the day, and I behaved. But let's move on to our next topic.
And that's not to, you know, let me just go ahead and preface that. That's not to say there's not legitimate diseases and stuff of that nature. So, you know.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, that the psychological
very
stuff
broad generalization.
Is just seems harder to understand than, like, say, something that you derive from, you know, actual, you know, physical sciences. Cirrus, have you heard of Cirrus, the dwarf planet?
Yes.
Apparently, in the, you know, if you ever see a picture of the solar system, there's the big asteroid ring kind of in the middle of it, and there's a few big rocks out there that are never developed into actual planets, but they're since they're not orbiting anything, they're not considered a moon. They call them protoplanets or dwarf planets. And back in 2007, NASA launched the Dawn spacecraft, which was supposed to study two of the biggest dwarf planets in that system, Cirrus and whatever the other one was that I don't have in front of me. Oh, Vesta. And it just finished up checking out Vesta. Now it's on its way to Cirrus, and it's still like a good ways away. But now they're seeing this bright spot on the surface of this dwarf planet that they're not sure what it is.
I mean, I just like the last sentence of the article here that, you know, we just see a big bright area, and we can't be sure that it isn't a Death Star powering up.
Yeah. Suppose in the next couple of days it'll actually arrive in orbit, so maybe we'll have an update to this story later on. But yeah, right now one of the theories is it kind of looks like it's in a crater, so it could be they're saying frozen ice in some kind of deep crater that's reflecting sunlight, but also could be some kind of alien city that we don't know about, or like he said, a Death Star powering up.
So that's going to be a curious one. I'll have to keep my eyes out and see what. I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of like you. Space just fascinates me, and I love astronomy and everything else. So I definitely want to follow this one more closely and see what, you know, the results yield.
Yeah, I mean, by the time this episode releases, it should have arrived at the planet. So maybe we can tack on an update toward the end if we find any new stuff before this is released. But yeah, it's going to be. It's just, I think we're going to be checking out that. Around for like the next year or so, checking out that the Cirrus. So maybe we'll get some answers on what the bright spot is. Could be some kind of alien, you know, rave club or something.
That's where the astronauts are going to get their party on without NASA knowing.
So we've lost contact with your space shuttle. Don't worry about it.
But speaking of possible Death Stars, there's been a bunch of explosions in the Siberian wilderness of Russia. This story kind of came out last year that they discovered these giant holes in northern Russia that looked like something exploded from the ground outward. And it's an area of Russia where they're in the Yamal Peninsula, where there's literally no one there. I mean, there's reindeer herdsmen, and that's about it.
I mean, dude, You ever seen a reindeer step on a landmine? Although I don't see a landmine creating these size craters looking at the satellite imagery.
Yeah, they are. I'm talking giant craters. And it's and some of them have even kind of formed into lakes now that they're so big. And recently they've found seven more on satellite images that have occurred more recently. One of the theories is that it's as the permafrost is defrosting, there's giant pockets of gas-infused water that have defrosted with our possible global warming that we kind of talked about during the Doomsday Clock episode. But yeah, these gas pockets are now defrosting and they're trying to escape, kind of like when you open a Coke bottle or pop a cork on a champagne bottle and it's just blowing out.
Yeah, imagine having a champagne bottle pull of methane and interesting little experiment.
Yeah, but one of the things that they're unsure of is, I mean, there's no real way to really predict if this is some kind of big disaster in the making. You know, we don't know if one of these is going to open up under a city somewhere. So,
yeah, and I mean, these things are relatively new, too, because looking here, you know, basically, you know,
the
they
first ones were
kind of like
discovered
45 years
year.
Ago or something, you know. I mean, so, you know, I mean, that's when the first documented, you know, escaping of the gases was documented. And then, you know, they say the process continues today. And
yeah, I mean, it's definitely becoming more prevalent. So yeah, right now the scientists are on their way to kind of set up monitoring stations and like earthquake detectors and stuff in the area to see if they can kind of catch one of these as it's pops off and study it a little bit more than, because right now, like I said, it's so far from any civilization that, you know, these things could have happened 6 months ago and we don't know. It's just, you know, whenever the satellite happens to pass over and see what's going on, or it could be the Death Star laser and you're doing some test.
I mean, I see here the article, you know, they're basically trying to, you know, sway that, you know, this could be, you know, due to Earth's warming climate, you know, for the global warming aspect. I mean, I'm not going to say that yay or nay on that one. There's obviously a lot of people smarter than I that's doing analysis, but, you know, I've got to say over the course of the year or the Earth, you know, that things probably heated and cooled and everything else. And at the end of the day, you know, Mother Nature is going to figure out a way to balance herself out.
Yeah. And speaking of saving the planet, one of the most interesting articles I've came across.
Do you tread lightly with this one? We definitely don't want this one to end with a bang.
Oh, literally.
Or an ejaculation of gases.
Poor choice of words, my friend. The porn site Pornhub has developed something they're calling the Wank Band. It's basically a fitness device you can wear on your wrist that has a valve in it that creates energy with up and down movements. Yeah, it will also work on, you know, if you, I guess you're exercising and walking or whatever, but as your arms move up and down, this watch type thing will generate electricity and store it. And then you can basically plug any kind of USB device in it and charge it off of this, you know, kinetic energy that's built up in this watch band.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a mechanical watch that, you know, basically serves this purpose. Has no battery, but with your, you know, day-to-day wrist movement and everything else, it turns a little, you know, turbine in there that generates energy that keeps the watch powered. So if you don't wear the watch for 2 or 3 days, then, you know, you've got to sit there and rotate it for two or 3 minutes.
It's kind of funny that's been being released by a porn site, but I mean, this is actually from what I've read of it.
Well,
some
technology. The interesting aspect is, so you've got this little, you know, generator. So, you know, regardless of how you power it, I mean, we'll just go with shaking of the wrist to keep it somewhat family friendly. But then you can plug in, you know, any USB powered devices and actually charge,
phone,
you know,
laptop,
phones,
you know,
or, you know,
whatever.
Anything else from this. So kind of a cool idea, you know, especially if you're on the go or something.
Yeah, they're not available yet, but if you go to the wankband.com, you can actually sign up to be a beta tester for this device when it comes out. So if you want to try to charge your phone and see if this thing actually works, go for it. I think that'll about wrap us up for science. I do want to give a quick shout out to Cigar Rep. Gave me a cigar to try, Avo Dominion, I believe it's called. It's actually a pretty good smoke.
I have not had any of their cigars yet, but I definitely need to give it a go.
And we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
And now it's time for All Things Nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News. We've got an extensive lineup. Once again, all over the spectrum. So with no further ado, let's just jump into it.
What's our first thing on the agenda?
Well, up first, we've got 33 comics will be canceled for Secret Wars coming from Marvel. So I think we've seen, you know, Marvel over the course of its run basically cancel out programs, and I almost wonder if this isn't a false marketing ploy.
Well, I mean, Secret Wars is coming up, and they're getting to the point where they're going to try to reboot some stuff. So they're, you know, during the Secret Wars thing, they're going to kill off a bunch and cancel a bunch of titles, which doesn't mean they're gone for good. They're, you know, we'll probably in a few months get, you know, reset back to issue one and, you know, kind of come up with some new storylines. That too, and we've seen Marvel, I think we've talked about it before, that they're canceling a lot of the stuff that they don't have the movie rights to anymore. So they're not going to support stuff that are, you know, Sony, Universal, Fox programs. So they're like, you know, we're not going to, but yeah, like, so the all new Captain America, all new X-Men's gone, Amazing Spider-Man, Ultimate Spider-Man, Deadpool on the one that I'm like, that sucks.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can't keep a good Deadpool down. They'll probably reboot that at some point.
Deadpool never dies.
New Avengers, Thor. So I guess they're getting rid of the girl Thor since they're stopping that series. Wolverine, X-Men. I mean, yeah, Rocket Raccoon, I think, is another one on the list.
Yeah, I mean, it says here Guardians of the Galaxy, Hulk, New Avengers.
It's something they do every couple of years. They'll do, like, you know, freaking Crisis on Infinite Earths. Or,
you know, like you said, you know.
Secret Invasion. Yeah, Civil War. Like I said, they go through these things where they shut down a lot of stuff and they just reboot it later and, you know, kind of reset everything back to a starting point. So, actually, this is a good thing if you're, you know, have been out of comics for a while and wanting to get back into comics. You know, after this goes through, it'll be a good starting point where you can jump in when a lot of this stuff comes brand new, or they're starting brand new series. It gives you a good, you know, jumping off point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and Gabriel, you know, quotes that, you know, Secret Wars will affect every title in some way, shape, or form. So you can definitely expect Spider, Gwen, Howard the Duck, all new Hawkeye, and others to deal with it in their own ways. So, you know, he said, you know, also adding, you know, some may take a hiatus for a month or two, something the industry is accustomed to. Some will, you know, reach their, you know, 616, you know, finale and become Battle World Transform, and still others, you know, will basically get to those later on. So, yeah.
So it's definitely not a permanent shutting down of things.
Up next, you know, this one here, you know, we kind of touched on it. I guess we're a little bit the insensitive side, but you know, switching from Marvel over to DC, there's been quite a bit of controversy over the you know, Joker and you know, the Batgirl variant cover. In fact, that cover has now been canceled, and you know, basically it shows, you know, Joker, you know, holding Batgirl, you know, got a gun in his hand and stuff like that. Obviously, you know, got the Joker grin, you know, etched into her face. And, you know, a lot of folks were upset by this so much that the, you know, original artist, you know, said that, hey, you know, it was never my intention to hurt or upset anyone. But I've recommended to DC that the, you know, variant cover be pulled, and DC agreed.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a dark, violent cover. So I could see some people that, you know, still view comics as a kid's medium getting upset about that. But, I mean, I like some of the darker storylines. You know, I mean, the original whatever Killing Joke series was one of the greatest, you know, comic books there is.
It's one of the most artistically, you know, portrayed traumatic relationships between, you know, Barbara Gordon and the Joker. And, you know, even the artist, you know, says that is, you know, I meant this to pay a homage to, you know, a comic I really admire and was a favorite to, you know, many readers. And, you know, I guess without those, you know, I guess backstories and the intent oftentimes just gets lost in translation to folks that ultimately, you know, have other agendas. So, I mean, I just see this as another way of, you know, people raising their voices and, you know, the impact that the overall masses can have on, you know, certain comics and things like that. And, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, you know, you're paying artists and creators, you know, so much for their ideas and, you know, their talents. And I almost feel like we're taking away from those in a way.
Yeah. I mean, anytime you're kind of censoring someone's artwork. It's, you know, it kind of limits the medium that way. So, I mean, people get offended, but I say, you know, let them do whatever.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't like it or whatever, guess what? Don't buy it. Don't read it. You know, the market, you know, decide on if this was a good idea or not. You know, not necessarily, you know, public opinion and outcry.
Metal.
Up next, so we've talked about previously the all-female cast version of Ghostbusters. Well,
you know, I was against that at the beginning, and I really still am, but it's not for the reason most people are like, oh, you're just like, you know, a dick and think like, you know, girls shouldn't have their own Ghostbusters. It's not the fact that there's girls in it. The cast they've announced, I'm a fan of their work. They've always done hilarious stuff, but the part that I didn't like was that had no... None of the original cast was involved. It was a reboot. Yeah, I'm always we should continue the story, have the original people involved in some way, even if you are going to do a girls Ghostbuster cast. But like I said, I've historically been against reboots, and that's why I hate the idea of the all female Ghostbusters. But to quell they've announced a second Ghostbusters movie. We're getting two Ghostbusters now, and we're getting the Dude Ghostbuster cast, which is going to be produced by Dan Aykroyd and Ivan Reitman, the original creators of the Ghostbusters. I believe the Russo brothers are writing. I think they've been involved with some of the Marvel stuff. And so far, they've, I think, announced Channing Tatum is going to be one of the new Ghostbusters.
Yep. So, you know, I'm really curious to, you know, see this reboot. I mean, I think that at the end of the day, there's enough room for two more Ghostbusters. I mean,
and it's supposedly supposed to be in the same universe as the female Ghostbusters movie. So it's going to be, they're trying to do kind of like a Marvel type thing with.
So are we going to see like a team of six Ghostbusters mash up at the end? I don't know. I mean, is there going to be some kind of crazy lovers quarrel between, you know?
It may be like a franchise thing where like, you know, the girl Ghostbusters are the New York Ghostbusters and the guys Ghostbusters are like the LA chapter or something. There's not really been a whole lot of announced about the storyline, but you know, if let's say Channing Tatum is the if he's the Venkman character, who would you like to see as Ray, Egon, and Winston?
Oh, you put me on the spot. You bastard. I don't know, man. I mean, there's so many. What the hell? Chris Pratt's been in every other movie. Why not we put him in this one, too?
I would say, for me, if they were doing the Egon stereotype, the guy from Big Bang Theory, he plays Sheldon. I mean, he's a tall, nerdy guy.
Yeah,
I mean,
and you know, they're actually talking about, you know, Egon possibly casting him in another film, too. But we could touch base on that in a later news.
And I would say the Winston, we could get, was it Donald Glover from, as his name, the one from Scrubs, who's been in a lot of nerdy
stuff.
Yeah, I think
that's Donald.
I think he could do a decent, you know, Winston. Or, so we just need a Ray. If Channing's there, they could always pull, you know, his 21 Jump Street sidekick.
Oh, dude, that would be a crazy mashup, too.
Yeah, make him be Ray. So, I mean,
I'm excited about this project. Clear it, 24 Jump Street.
Yeah, I'm excited about this one. Yeah, like I said, I'll probably see the girls one anyway, but I'm just kind of against the idea of a reboot. But you know, since Dan Aykroyd and Ivan Reitman's involved in this one, I'm a lot more excited about this version of the story than the previously announced Ghostbusters.
Definitely. Well, up next, we're going to switch gears and jump into the video game spectrum. So, a all-new Star Wars Battlefront is, you know, set to premiere next month, and the platforms have been confirmed, and unfortunately, I think this is going to be one of the breaking points that's going to force me to have to buy a next-gen console. So, looks like a PS4 in my future, that way I can get in on Batman action and, you know, take advantage of all the Mortal Kombat X stuff and Battlefront.
Speaking of Mortal Kombat X, they've announced Jason Voorhees is going to be one of the playable characters in the new Mortal Kombat X.
So, I mean, that only makes sense. I mean, I think they've used Freddy in the past and stuff like that. So, I mean,
yeah, whenever the last one came out, yeah, Freddy was like a downloadable character. But yeah, Jason's been announced for this one. So that should be interesting.
So, you know, something to keep your eyes tuned to. More to your line of story. I mean, you know, what is it? You know, shipyourenemiesglitter.com or something like that.
Yeah,
you know,
have you ever told someone to go eat a bag of dicks?
Well,
now you can actually do that. There's a website called dicksbymail.com that if you go on there and it's for like $15.99, they will send an anonymous package to your enemies that's a bag of gummy penises with a note that says, eat a bag of dicks. No other identifying marks, and they'll, you know, whoever you send it to will have no idea that it came from you, but it's a little,
trust me, funny. I get a bag of gummy, you know, phallic-shaped objects. I'm going to know who it came from.
That's what I already got you for your birthday.
Sweet. Well, at least I won't go hungry. Let's just hope they're not cream-filled or something.
Oh, God. No bueno.
And up next, you know, an article I stumbled across, Kevin Smith to honor... yeah, you know, one of the passing of his dear friends is confirmed to making Mallrats 2.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was a big fan of the first Mallrats movie. So, I mean, anything Kevin Smith, you know, I guess it kind of gets my geek going.
Yeah, I mean, the original Mallrats didn't do very well in the box office following up Clerks, but it made a huge impact on video. I mean, that's kind of become a cult classic. And yeah, I love the original Mallrats. So speaking of bag of dicks, yeah, this makes you want to get like some chocolate-covered pretzels and give somebody a stink palm.
Yeah. I feel bad for that insurance claims adjuster.
You should have showed up on time.
Yep. He'll pay the price. Anyway. You were talking earlier about a movie trailer that you had saw for Pixel, right?
Yeah, we kind of talked about the Ready Player One book. This kind of reminds me of that. It's... And this is going to be an Adam Sandler movie. And they've just released the trailer for it, and it looks awesome. Basically, back in the 80s, we sent this like space probe off with like examples of our culture, and I guess it included like video games and other stuff in it. Well, now the aliens, I guess, took that as a insult or an act of war or something. So now aliens are invading the Earth, but all their stuff is based on like 80s video games. So like the spaceship looks like the spaceships from Space Invaders. There's even, like, Pac-Man, like, you know, running around eating buses and whatnot in the city. And it's up to, like, a team of heroes that are, I guess, expert in 80s gaming to defeat the aliens.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, speaking of Ready Player One, the author of the book, there's actually another book coming out by Ernest Klein. And I'm trying to remember what the title of that one is. It's not going to be a sequel. Let's see. I mean, because Ready Player One was such just an awesome book, and I love the author's, you know, freaking, you know, writing style and everything else. Let's see here.
So we're looking at one thing from Pixel. I like in the trailer, they're trying to fight Pac-Man, and so they've got a bunch of these like tricked out Mini Coopers that are representing the ghosts, and they actually got the designer of Pac-Man to like help them, and he's like, Pac-Man is a good man. He's like my son. I must try to talk to him, and goes like trying to like talk sense to Pac-Man, and Pac-Man like bites his arm off, and he's like, he's evil, kill him.
Yeah, but I believe the next book that Ernest Klein is releasing is going to be called Armada. You know, still playing to the video game geeky, you know, culture with all the pop culture references and stuff that, you know, his book was, you know, first went, you know, New York Times bestseller. So, you know, this is something that once we get a for sure release date, then, you know, we can touch base on. And then after that, dude, I don't know about you, but Kraft macaroni and cheese, it's a staple of my diet. I mean, let's just be honest. I mean,
yeah, most nerds and drunks and whatever, in the middle of the night, you need, yeah, you want to stack on something. Some Kraft mac and cheese is the shit.
Kraft has recalled 6.5 million boxes of macaroni and cheese and metal.
No!
So, you know, this impacts the, you know, 7.25 ounce individual boxes. The affected date code is
so the SpongeBob ones are still good. I can
the SpongeBob ones, and I think there was a home style. I mean, these are strictly for the classic noodles, but September 18th 2015 through October 11th 2015 with C2 below the code date are the boxes included in the recall. So you may want to double check your pantries and make sure that you're not, you know, digesting little shards of metal with that.
Metal!
Yeah. So, I mean, with that, that's about my wrap up on Nerd News. Well, Joe, you got anything else?
Yeah, we also have some recent Star Wars news, too. They've released the release date of Episode 8, which is going to come out sooner than we expected. The Episode 7's coming out in December, and Episode 8's going to already be out next May. So it's, you know, 5 months later, we're going to get another edition of Star Wars. Plus, they've also announced the first standalone spinoff series is going to be called Rogue One. They've not really announced any details of that yet, but judging from the title, it sounds like it's going to be some kind of, like, you know, X-Wing-based, you know, movie. Which we don't know if it's going to be set in the new timeline or if it's going to be like a flashback to, say, Wedge Antilles in the original Rogue Squadron. But, you know, Rogue One traditionally refers to the leader as the leader of the, you know, Rogue Squadron.
Sweet. So, I mean, definitely something to, you know, once again, pique my geekdom and keep my eyes open for.
Yeah, I think that's about it. Any final thoughts on getting old or whatnot?
Getting old isn't half as fun as growing up. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Well, like I said, check us out on our Facebook page. Check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, on the ESO Network. You can check us out on our website, CigarNerdPodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter at CigarNerdPod. And as always, as soon as I find my quote for this week...
And I need you to do this in character, by the way.
From this one's from Mad Max. I am the Knight Rider. I am a fuel-injected suicide machine. I am the rocker. I am the roller. I am the out-of-controller. I am the Knight Rider, baby. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.